Diversity is one of Oslo Met's core values, and the university's action plan for diversity states that the diversity competence of our managers shall be raised to enable the value to be translated into management. Well, how do we translate a concept that can mean everything and thus nothing into action and management? To help me explore this topic, I have with me Sarah Louise Moore. She is an associate professor at Copenhagen Business School, academic director of CBS BIS platform Diversity and Difference, and member of CBS Council of Diversity and Inclusion. She is researching on issues relating to gender, ethnicity, sexuality, diversity management, and HR management. You held a course for some of our leaders today, mm-hmm. and you started off with making a distinction between diversity and inclusive management. Mm-hmm. Enlighten us.
I shall try. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, we tend to distinguish between diversity and inclusion, where diversity is when we have a tendency to count, to calculate. That means a matter of representation, mm-hmm. so that when mm-hmm. we have diversity initiatives, it's a matter of the number of female managers, for mm-hmm. example, mm-hmm. the number of ethnic minorities mm-hmm. in an organization, etc. Mm-hmm. So it's very much counting what's the representation of a certain group of minorities, mm-hmm. and should we increase that group or another yes. group. Mm-hmm. Inclusion, on the other hand, is more directed at inclusive environments. Mm-hmm. So it's more how do we treat each other? What is our work climate like? Mm-hmm. Can we be open about our sexual orientation, for example? Mm-hmm. Is there a culture of racism or sexism at the workplace? Mm-hmm. So it's much more working with how we treat each other as human beings. Okay. And as I usually also say, I mean, diversity or differences, they are human conditions. Mm-hmm. So everyone has a diversity, so to speak. Everyone mm-hmm. has a difference. Mm-hmm. So in inclusion, it's all of those differences, whether it's gender, race, mm-hmm. age, etc., mm-hmm. which is taken into consideration.
Yeah, I see. Thank you. You open your lecture with underlining the importance of being aware of our biases, both
yes.
the implicit and explicit. Mm-hmm. Could you explain the difference between them?
Yes. So explicit biases are the biases we are aware of. Mm-hmm. So those can be, for example, political observations or opinions about political parties. Mm-hmm. So some people might even be, you know, explicitly racist or explicitly sexist if they believe that, for example, men are better at something than women are. So that's an explicit bias towards a certain gender, for example. The implicit biases, those are the biases we are not aware of. They might be unconscious, and we might practice them unconsciously. Mm-hmm. So that these are the biases which almost come as a gut reaction or as a reflex mm-hmm. to certain aspects that we encounter. Mm-hmm. And has nothing to do with whether we explicitly or willingly want to display these kinds of biases. Mm-hmm. And everybody is biased, because if you're not biased, that means you will have to take in the whole world from a clean slate, yes. which is basically mentally impossible, because mm-hmm. we need categories mm-hmm. to sort and filter our experiences through.
Of course. Mm-hmm. In an organizational context, what can be the critical implications of a management that is not aware of the stereotypical perceptions mm-hmm. or maybe implicit biases mm-hmm. that exist in the organizations?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are several aspects, and I can, for example, take two typical situations. So one will be recruitment processes, mm-hmm. and another one would be just day-to-day office life, maybe lunchroom talk. So in recruitment situations, it has been scientifically proven over and over again in many, many contexts that women and ethnic minorities are systematically evaluated lower than white males. Mm-hmm. And that has nothing to do with the competences as such, but that we expect certain groups to have competences and expect certain groups not to have competences or have different competences. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if we take the male-female divide, it's very typical to expect men to be strategic, arrogant, more assertive, and women to be softer, more holistic, nurturing. Mm. So if a man, for example, is more nurturing, he's often seen as too soft for a managerial role. And if a female, a woman is too assertive, she very often risks being called a bitch or something worse. So that's in the recruitment processes, it can have detrimental effects for who we hire, who we want to hire, because we then tend to hire people who look like ourselves. So one of the things one can work with is anonymous recruitment, or at least anonymous shortlisting. So erase the name in the first round of evaluating CVs. Pictures, for example. In most application processes in the Western world, it is encouraged to include a picture. And I would say, well, why is that? Because what does a picture do for us, except for us being able to mobilize all of our biases? The other situation could be something as simple as a lunchroom situation. How do we talk to each other? What are we surprised about when we encounter each other? What's the tone we use against each other? What do we laugh of? What's funny? What's not funny? So usually the implicit biases don't come out as radical discrimination or outright discrimination, but what we call subtle discrimination or everyday discrimination. So in relation to racism, it can be the question, so but where are you really from? Which some people will get over and over again. Well, Norway would be the answer. But if the color of skin doesn't fit the category, the national category of Norwegian, then that is a question that can be asked many, many times. And the first time, it's okay, but if it happens maybe several times a month over a lifetime, that is systematic discrimination, but subtle discrimination.
You said that biases produces stereotypes. In our work life, confronted with these stereotypes, what strategies could be useful then to meet them?
Yeah. There are several strategies, and I talked about several earlier today, but one of them could, for example, be stereotype replacement. So we can train staff, we can train ourselves to, first of all, spot the stereotypes, spot when they're used, when they're said out loud, in a meeting, in a lunchroom, in a recruitment process, and then spot the stereotype and say, hey, that's not okay. How do you know that? So spot it, label it as a stereotype, reflect over it, possibly make the person who said it reflect over the stereotype, and then replace it with a non-stereotype. So that could be one strategy. And quite often, it shouldn't be the person that is the victim, or at least the object of the stereotype, that should say something. It could also be a bystander that can interrupt and say, hey, I don't think that all Greek people, for example, are like that. Should we encounter that? Do you want one more? So another one could be, for example, looking for specific information about that group. So we have a tendency of generalizing, also because of the implicit bias. Implicit bias is also a shortcut to decision making. So instead of judging a person based on the group that person belongs to, for example, a stereotype of I don't know, Germans always being on time and African people being late could be an obvious or a used one. Well, then seek specific information about the individual we're talking about. So if there is an individual, then don't link that individual to the group, but look for specific information about that individual. In a recruitment process, it could be if you discuss a candidate, then never or catch yourself in, well, French people used to be like this, German are like that, African, Indian, etc., etc., and seek specific information about that person instead.
And we have a tendency to generalize when it comes to the others.
Yes.
And not to ourselves or the in-group.
Yes, because we have a tendency of seeing the others and not our own stereotype, so to speak. So sometimes what I also do when I give a class on diversity management is to show a video of the stereotypes of the in-group. So here it would be, well, show a video about the stereotypes about Norwegians, and then discuss how does that make you feel to be portrayed in that group.
Yeah. You also presented a list of recommendations on how organizations can work with diversity and inclusion.
Yes.
It was quite a long list,
yeah.
Where to start?
Yeah. So first of all, I would say look for evidence of where implicit bias shows up. So where in the organization does implicit bias shine through the decision-making processes? And as I said before, it happens everywhere, every day, for everyone. It happens to me very, very often. I think I'm maybe more aware of it than other people, but I very often, you know, catch myself thinking that way. So training awareness bias awareness of the biases or awareness training would be a place to start. The second one could be, well, create a culture of equal opportunities. If we are biased, then we are not capable of making decisions based on merit. And we should be brave enough to admit that. And if we are to create a culture of equal opportunities, we need to make sure that people have the same starting point. So we talk about privilege, so white male privilege, that white men basically start from a different position than women and particularly non-Western immigrants start from. So if we want a culture of equal opportunities, we shouldn't use the argumentation around, well, he or she also needs to be qualified, we can't make a quota higher, etc., etc. I think you've heard this argumentation in Norway many times when it comes to women's or female quotas. But as I usually say, well, we have hired a lot of mediocre men during the time. So it's about equal opportunities, not necessarily about representation as such. Do you want me to go through the list? I can do that.
Yes, please.
So the next one is creating a culture of inclusion. And as I talked before about the difference between diversity and inclusion, this one is much more about the way we speak to each other. So how do we make sure that we include everyone? And we can do that by not assuming certain values, certain qualifications, certain job titles based on what person looks like. So if it's a woman, we very quickly assume certain values or attach certain values to her. If it's a person of color, we very soon attach certain values to that person. So instead, try to open up for different possibilities. We can also talk about sexual orientation here. So instead of asking a woman, so what did you and your husband do? Then you can go, what did you and your partner do? Or if you would ask about a partner, you can say, so what does your partner do for a living? And then the person can, you know, out oneself or not, but not taking heterosexuality for a point of departure, yes, for example. Third one could be ensure transparency, particularly in the hiring processes. So most hiring processes are not transparent at all. The criteria for hiring a person are often very subjective and very kind of loosely defined, even though we try to explain it in a job ad. We all know the people who hire other people, it takes 30 seconds from a person walks in the door until we've, you know, made a decision whether this person is hireable or not. So what we can do is to have much more transparency about what are the qualifications we actually need. We discussed today the language, qualification of language. Well, yes, in some instances it is necessary to speak Norwegian, but in many other instances it isn't. But still it is often used as an implicit criteria for hiring new people. The same thing about Danish in Denmark. So Danishness, the Danish language, it seems very important. But if we break down the job description, is it really important for this particular job, yes or no? And how important is it? And can we also train this person language skills? Anonymous shortlistings would be another one. So, there's no reason to have names and pictures on CVs to begin with. Make it anonymous. Be surprised about what comes in. It's often one of the huge cultural shocks people, or it's difficult to kind of redo that procedure. Also, when it comes to grading at a university, anonymous exams, etc., in order to not have that bias. about question and reducing stereotypes. So we, that was one of the strategies. Mm-hmm. I mean, be the person that says, hey, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. Question the stereotype used and try to redo it. Because quite often when people are then confronted with having used the stereotype, they go, you're right, I didn't think about it. Mm-hmm. Because it's often the implicit bias and not the explicit bias that kicks in, which means people do not do it because they're evil people, mm-hmm. but because of culturally, historically categories that we're grown up with, which, I mean, yeah, basically has a power over us like nothing else. Practice diversity in a university context, in the teaching, the curriculum. Mm-hmm. Go through the curriculum. We usually have a saying like check your curriculum. Yes. So look at the curriculum and check for, I mean, non-white and female authors. How many of those authors are on the curriculum? It could be the panels. How do we construct them? Try to also construct panels which are both gender and also kind of race mixed. Mm-hmm. It can be when you host conferences, who's the keynote speaker. It can be in cases you use, who is the protagonist in the cases. Very simple checklists to just undo it, because it is what our students see. It is what our employees see. And that representation is then repeated in, you know, our mental models. And the last one, train staff.
Yes.
Offer courses, maybe obligatory ones.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much, Sarah, for giving us practical and constructive advice on how to transform this immediate fluffy value diversity into action and management. Thank you.
You're welcome.